You're listening to Weird and Dead, the paleontology podcast that tells evolution's most embarrassing and bizarre stories. I'm Amy Atwater.
And I'm Megan Wetherell, and we're two living scientists who are weirdly excited about dead things.
From weird animals to weird geology, the Burgess Shale has it all, but it isn't necessarily as unique as we thought.
In this episode, we talk about bizarre animals, the concept of jellyfish jerky, and a world that just fossilizes differently.
Also, weird things you can do to worms
for science. Like always, our podcast talks about some disgusting stuff, so please read through the content warnings before continuing. I'm going to get us started off today by talking about possibly the most feminist fossil takeover of all time, which is the fossil Aningvermis. Now, Aningvermis is from the Cambrian period, about 500 million years ago, and it's found in the Burgess Shale deposits in Canada. And the reason that it is such a great fossil and such a great feminist takeover is, first off, it's named after Mary Anning, which is great. And Aningvermis is a preapulid worm, which is a fancy science name for penis worm. Penis worms are named not for what they look like in the fossil record. We know what they look like now because they still exist. They are a predatory worm that lives in the ocean and looks like a dick. And they're pink. They're floppy. They're gross. I will say that in the fossil record, they are slightly less human penis-y and more like terrifying cat penis-y because they have like spikes and
this
spines and all sorts of horrific.
Better and better.
Yeah, this is a great way to start off, right?
Yeah, I love
and it. And the cool thing about preapulid, well, there's a lot of cool things about penis worms. But this penis worm and other penis worms in the Burgess Shale are really, really extraordinarily well fossilized. They don't look like you just took a soft, fleshy tube and you squashed it in the dirt. There's actually things like, I think, stomach contents are preserved in some cases. They have exceptional preservation, which is not characteristic necessarily of penis worms and other soft-bodied organisms, but it is certainly characteristic of the Burgess Shale. I always thought that this was something super unique to the Burgess Shale. Imagine my surprise when I learned that there are now, as of 2014, which is the last paper that I read on that listed a number, there are 50 sites with Burgess Shale type preservation from the Middle Cambrian. So Burgess Shale type meaning super, super awesome. Also, you get penis worms. Well, you can preserve penis worms if you get them. It's a soft tissue preservation. So, yeah, 50, which did mean that this paper in 2014 decided that that was enough to start categorizing and ranking them. So it was no longer, oh, you have exceptional preservation. It's you have almost as exceptional preservation as the Burgess Shale, but not quite as exceptional.
Okay.
You know, we
so
do love ranking and naming things.
As the epitome, the Burgess is still a number one. Has anything come close to knocking Burgess off of its giant mountain?
Yes, there are a couple that have come pretty close, but it kind of depends on what you are looking for. So if you are looking for, you know, one of the hardest things to preserve would be something like a jellyfish, which is super, super soft and fragile. And also not living on the ground. So harder to catch and put in the dirt without having it decompose, for example, beforehand. So if you want really, really nice jellyfish fossils, there was a new one described in 2019 called the Qingjiang biota, which is from the early Cambrian of South China. That's different from the Qingjiang biota, which is also Cambrian and also exceptional. But the Qingjiang biota has incredible preservation of cnidarians, so jellyfish, anemones, that sort of thing. So I would say that probably that would be a good challenger for the Burgess Shale, as is the Qingjiang as well. They have lots and lots of jellyfish in some of these like more beautifully preserved sites. But it's not as unique as I thought it was, unless you're looking at deep time. So if you're looking from the Cambrian to now, jellyfish fossils during the Cambrian, startlingly common, still patchy, still not perfectly preserved, but really weirdly preserved, considering that pretty much since then, fucking nothing. Like, If you want penis worm preservation, you're going to be looking for the little holes that they dig. You're not going to be finding the actual penis worms themselves. You're not going to be finding jellyfish. You're probably not going to find anything that they do actually after about the Cambrian, because yeah, that preservation is exceptional and it is specific to that time period for a couple of reasons that we'll discuss shortly. Cool. Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily like super unique during the Cambrian. It is incredibly unique when you compare it to all of the rest of time. So still winning for sure.
And that makes, yeah, I never thought about it too much before. But right, we talk about the Cambrian, like specifically this is around 500 million years ago and a little bit after that, mm-hmm. maybe some a little bit before that.
It's like 510, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. 508 is what I saw a lot of spots as well. Yes. And then I don't think a whole lot about the penis worm record between present day and then, when you just told me that they're still alive. And I'm wearing my penis worm pants in honor of today's
which
episode.
Does have Anning Vermis on it. Yeah, I made a penis worm paisley print for my store. You too can own this print. And it has Anning Vermis as one of the penis worms on it. I don't remember which one Anning Vermis is, but I'm sure it's the coolest one.
They're all amazing though. And the side says bioturbated. And I have had a few people ask me about that. Only one person got upset.
I did initially when I was designing that, I had a pair of shorts where I had bioturbated written across the ass. Because I thought that was even funnier. I couldn't find very good shorts. They weren't like sleeping shorts. They were all like jogging shorts, but like that weird jogging material. So it didn't feel like it met the vibes of a scientific equivalent to juicy.
You need it to be like Juicy Couture. Yeah, exactly. Juicy Couture. Just bioturbated across.
Yeah, Juicy Couture doesn't write itself on like windbreaker style fabric. You know, like it's got to be a certain type of fabric, and I couldn't find it. So I settled for the sweatpants.
Yeah, they're red. I like them. They replaced another pair of paleo pants that I had that said the mammoth site, which I also found hilarious to have my pants say the mammoth site. I just couldn't. I loved those pants.
It's
I wore them
huge.
Into the ground. Yeah, exactly. Like, get ready. Are you ready for all this jelly? Too bad. It's mammoth. Yes. Wearing the amazing pants and excited for today. We've already touched on, you know, soft tissue and exceptional preservation. Yet we have hinted around topics that we're going to get to really go into today with the deepest time that we've talked about. I mean, again, we are talking, I'm going to just go 500 million years ago, which, as we have established as mammal paleontologists, the oldest mammal fossil I have ever personally worked on was 66 million years old. So I'm a little bit out of my comfort zone, which is exciting because you're going to hear my take on Burgess fossils, which is not that of an expert. By any, well, I mean, an expert enthusiast. I'll start with that. And the Burgess, I mean, we think of this time period as also the Cambrian explosion. And this is when we see a lot of visible life finally appear in the fossil record. And in a lot of ways, it does feel exactly that, like it was an incredibly rapid point for diversification and evolution, because we literally go from like no signs of jellyfish to like a full bell-shaped fucking jellyfish.
Yeah.
Like doing its thing.
Yeah.
And it's this question of, are we missing the lead up to some of these life forms, these bigger multicellular creatures? Did we miss it, or did it really happen that fucking fast?
Yeah.
And a lot of the evidence indicates that it happened that fucking fast in a lot of ways.
I realized as I was doing research for this that I have always thought that the Burgess Shale and the Cambrian explosion were early Cambrian. Like the fact that this is the middle Cambrian, little startling for me, a little hard to wrap my head around, just like a missing 50 million years in what I thought I was looking at. But, you know, there's weirder things about the Cambrian than that. So
50 million years when you're talking, you know, that's it's a fraction of that overall time.
Yeah, it's but just the Cenozoic.
You would kind of think that it would, and I don't know my deep time well enough about this, but you would also think that the beginning of the Cambrian explosion would mark the beginning of the Cambrian, because the Cambrian would be defined by, you know, a lot of times in our younger rocks, it's very much described by the presence or absence of specific creatures. Well, I guess that's kind of like, anyway, so it is kind of interesting that it's the middle Cambrian. It's like, well, what the fuck is going on before that? I'm sure a lot of things that I didn't read about for this. So apologies. Yes.
Yeah. So tell me some of the cool organisms that are found there.
Woo woo. Yeah, for sure. And I'm excited to hear about some of the sites too. So I haven't hiked up to the quarries in Yoho National Park where some of the original fossils at the Burgess Shale were discovered. And I've been lucky enough to go find trilobite fossils in the Wheeler Formation of Utah, which I'm pretty sure is another Middle Cambrian site. So first organism. I already told Megan I have a whole bunch of props, so they're not even photos though, but my little cute cozy almost called it an ammonite. That's not what this is. This is a trilobite. I'm off to a great start. It's gonna As I already said, they made a lot of mistakes figuring out these Burgess Shale fossils, and I might make some mistakes interpreting them for everybody. But this is a motherfucking trilobite, arguably one of the most iconic fossils that your mind's eye can generate. Though also a lot of folks have no freaking clue what a trilobite is. It's a beautiful quandary, but it is an early marine arthropod. It had three lobes to its body, hence trilobite. It would have had a shit ton of icky little creepy legs around its sides.
Yeah, you forget about the icky little creepy legs when you look at it, right? Like, it looks so cute. And then you have to remember how many fucking legs it probably had.
So many legs. Yeah, so many legs. Interesting, strange eyes. Some had things sticking off. Yeah. And things sticking off of their faces, their eye stalks and some of them and appendages.
Yeah.
And again, we have a site that, and multiple sites now, that preserve like just insane things, like to be able to get the detail of essentially what I think of as a freaking cockroach of the Paleozoic, like to get that level of detail about something that lived that long ago is really, really impressive. Yeah, so we had trilobites. They're pretty standard. There wasn't a whole lot of drama. I think trilobites had already been known from other areas, but Burgess offered a chance to, again, see some of those soft tissue features a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And they would have been, you know, eating weird dead shit in the muck and all the sediments and whatnot, and been looking out for this motherfucker right here that I have. Oh, yeah. Swimming
Such
across.
A nice plushie. Yeah,
yes,
it's beautiful. She's really giving me a whole puppet show on Zoom here. I mean, I can't see her whole body, so it's not that good of a puppet show. But like, you know, the vibe is right.
Oh, God, it's so true. Yeah, so Anomalocaris is what I'm showing you right now. It was one of, if not the largest animal and organism, I should say, in the ecosystem at that time. We're talking almost a meter long, so almost 3 feet.
Jeez.
And for when you're talking about critters, that a lot of them we're talking about like 1 or 2 inches is still pretty big for this time period. Anomalocaris was a big, chonky bitch. So one of my favorite aspects of Burgess is not only the cool fossils, but the stumbling of humans to figure out what these fossils are. And early on, Charles, he's the main, gets a lot of the credit. I'm going to use some other names for other researchers because that's what their names are, not Charles. I don't know where I'm going with this.
All old white men are named Charles. That's very well known, very well established.
I mean,
it's Charles
in
or John.
My family, that's very true. Yeah, that is solidly true. Very, very accurate. Like both of my grandfathers. Yeah, so they discover this site. It's high up in the Canadian Rockies, where in Yoho National Park is today. I mean, absolutely stunning. I think the site is at over 10,000 feet elevation. I mean, we are talking like very mountainous area and looking for these blobby things on the sides of mountains. And they notice that most of them preserved the whole organism. It was like a whole trilobite or like a whole weird, whole penis worm, a whole coral, a whole sponge, something like that, a whole weird shrimp thing. And they kept finding these strange other parts that they couldn't quite wrap their head around. One of them was this like circular disc shape that was interpreted
looks
to
like
be
a butthole.
It does look absolutely. That's what my favorite part of this, the stuffy, is it's got a great butthole.
She is currently holding up this 2 foot long stuffy and admiring its butthole mouth. Oh, she's making out with it. Okay.
It wishes. It has a really freaky mouth, so I'm pretty okay with not going down that. So it was first interpreted. Actually, okay, so got to take a little break. So my boy, Stephen Jay Gould, wrote a book called Wonderful Life, which is funny in its own that you named it that. And instead of it being about, you know, this classic Christmas story, it's about the Burgess Shale and the nature of history. And it is like not an easy read. It's very scientific. It's one of his more well-known books. And it goes into a lot of these amusing anecdotes around the history of these strange creatures. So yeah, they had this, they called it a jellyfish and it was Paetoia. And then they also had this other strange three-dimensional structure, Lagagania or something like that, that they thought was a sponge. Okay. And then one of them was like, I don't know, I keep finding this jellyfish and this sponge thing together. So maybe they're actually different parts of the same, or, you know, maybe these organisms aren't different organisms, or maybe they're codependent. Or that's a weird way. They're like, oh my God, you can't leave. And then they also had these isolated like shrimp arms into the mix too. So they had all of these different body parts and they were like, how does this work? Do we have the, they truly interpreted it to be about four different organisms before they found more and more of it and could actually piece together that it was all Anomalocaris. And the part that they had thought was the jellyfish is actually its mouth. And the part that they thought was Lagia or something was like the torso of it. And then because it had I said there's some weird shrimp parts that had also been included in this, and those were what had already been named Anomalocaris. And since they were the oldest one named, Anomalocaris is the name that stuck. And it's a pretty fitting name because it literally means abnormal shrimp, which is pretty accurate as to what Anomalocaris is.
If you have not seen Anomalocaris, it looks to me kind of like a flying lobster with two shrimp stapled to its face. Like that's and like weird hammerhead eyes.
And a weird suction. Well,
and
not
a butthole
suction,
mouth
but
on the underside.
Butthole mouth. And it really does. It looks like some kind of creepy, like mechanical device. And it's all just like blades of making up the mouth of. I found some.
This is
wild
what sea cucumbers wish they could have for their assholes.
It would be like a fucking pearlfish
guillotine garage door.
Oh my gosh. That is so great. Yeah, so the Anomalocaris, so we're talking a big predator. It didn't have any like limbs or anything like that. It actually just was more of a swimming thing, so it wasn't crawling around on the ground. And because of that, it doesn't technically have jointed legs, so it isn't technically a true arthropod because the defining factor of I believe arthropoda is this jointed leg thing. So it's, you know, it hangs out. She's right there. But okay. But then this group does call it arthropoda. So maybe I was just reading something old around that. But there, with all of these creatures, it's just really fascinating because a lot of our definitions are with modern groups. Yeah. And when you try to understand these origins of modern taxa in deep time, they of course don't follow your rules because they're freaking 500 million million years old. So that has been the funny part to work around is like, okay, we got some arthropods, we've got some cnidarians, we've got some like algae, and we've got some sponges and whatnot. But then trying to figure them all out where their modern things live is really, really rare. And I mean, the jellyfish are actually one of those problems too.
Yeah.
So with our jellyfish, we do indeed have legit jellyfish from the Burgess Shale. It's called Burgesso Medusa Phasimormis. Nope, that's wrong. Phasimormis. Phasiformis. There we go. That's what I'm going to stick with, which I believe literally translate to like the ghost jellyfish of the Burgess. And it's like you were saying, we've had jellyfish from the Burgess Shale for a really long time, but it hasn't been until technology and proper study has actually gone about to find that there are over 200 specimens of jellyfish of this specific Burgesso Medusa that are known from the Burgess Shale. A lot of them are, you can see them on display at the Royal Ontario Museum. I haven't been there, but that's what I read on the internet. They said that I could. Oh, with a ghostly form. And they said specifically, I know you're going to like this because you're going to laugh at me. Uh-huh. Specifically, we thought it looked like the ghost from the game Pac-Man. You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I do like that. Yeah. You, I know you don't like pop culture references because you don't understand anything that's not RuPaul's Drag Race, but that is cute. Pac-Man.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And again, one article that I read was like, so these are the oldest swimming jellyfish, that we have older jellyfish that may not have actually gone into the polyp form and actually been doing the free floating thing. So this one argued that there are actually some other older swimming jellyfish. But then the other article I read was like, no, it's super debated whether or not these 518 million year old jellyfish could swim or not. So it's still debated about what the exact oldest jelly is, but there's a pretty good, well, it's definitely sometime in the Cambrian, we'll put it that way. That keeps it nice and vague. And they would have been doing very like the exact same stuff that they were doing before. Yeah. They would turn into this when they swim, and they can turn into their beautiful jelly form after their juvenile period, and would have been doing their thing and zapping and SpongeBob up. Yeah, so it was fairly interesting to, I had just assumed that this was like the oldest known jellyfish, and then it finds out, well, of course there are layers to everything, and everything has drama. Right? Like, was it actually free swimming or not? And again, when we think of something like a jellyfish as kind of the epitome of just like a blob of an animal, that when you think of things preserving in deep time, that is kind of the last animal that you are ever going to think could be well preserved. It's just, it takes so many circumstances, and it's, I, from what I understand, it's insanely rare, at least as you're saying, for all of time.
Yeah. So the preservation of soft tissue in things that are squishy is pretty difficult. And it's a lot more difficult now because we don't have certain conditions in our ocean. But it's kind of debated as to why it happened at all, let alone why it happened, you know, 50 plus times with all of these different Cambrian localities. So when you look at these sites, one really consistent feature is that you find them in clay, which is a really, really fine particle. It's really, really small particles. Mm-hmm. And that is incredibly important for a lot of reasons. One big reason is it's harder to compress clay than it is to compress things like sand, because there's just no pore space. So if you have lots and lots of little tiny grains, they don't have any room in between them. So even if you put that whole Burgess Shale like mudstone under a mountain, which we did, and then lift it back up, it's not going to compress as much as if it was bigger particles like sand or silt. So clay is super important just for not squishing things. It gives you a nice 3D preservation. And it's why when we say things like we have a penis worm with its guts preserved, we don't mean that the penis worm got squished and its guts got sprayed out its mouth. We mean, no, we have like a penis
like a
worm
gusher.
That
yeah.
had Yeah. Yeah. It didn't spray. It didn't squirt. It got compressed, but not hard enough or fast enough to actually like become roadkill, right? These are not roadkill. They are like they're like pressed flowers instead. They're given some gentle compression. They're definitely still a relatively flat fossil, but they're not entirely like thrashed, because even though I personally feel like looking at most of these fossils is kind of like a Rorschach test, like there's just, yes. You're looking to see a blob, and I don't know how people interpret the blobs. Yeah, but that would be so much worse if these weren't preserved in clay. The other thing is, clay in and of itself can actually inhibit bacterial growth. So it depends on the type of clay. Different types of clay have different properties, but clay can actually cause bacteria to die. So that means you don't have anything breaking down all of your fossil material. Yeah. Yeah. Clay is great. So you've got clay. And then another pretty consistent feature with these Burgess shale type deposits. So that's what they call it. Because Burgess, I don't think it was necessarily first, but it was the fanciest, right? It was the one that first got really recognized. So everything's called Burgess shale type deposits. But with all of these deposits, you have mud that is very, very limey. And particularly you get like this top layer that has a lot of calcium carbonate. And they think that that was just deposited from the water, but that it had to go pretty quickly. And if you put calcium carbonate into your mud, it hardens it up quite a lot, which A, continues to prevent you from being squished, and B, prevents anybody from digging down to eat you. It also fills in the pore space, which prevents more bacteria from getting into your body. So basically all of these things were kind of working together in order to ensure that these animals were really well preserved. But it's not just happening in one spot. It's happening in lots and lots and lots of spots. And so each site does have some kind of unique preservation qualities. Some of them, for example, have like really strong pyritization. So the mineral pyrite, fake gold. Some of them have mineral replacements, so they look a little bit golden in certain Cambrian sites. Others have phosphate. It precipitates out. And it preserves things. This is, I guess, especially common in like arthropod guts. You get a lot of phosphate in there because there's phosphate kind of naturally existing in their guts. Although one paper I did read said that the mass balance equation didn't seem to work out, that there was more phosphate in the arthropod guts than just would have occurred naturally. Oh. So mass balance equation isn't mass balancing for some reason. So still don't really know why you get so much phosphate in these arthropod guts. But
rules.
Yeah, fossils don't follow rules. So yeah, you get like this exceptional preservation. And I will say that one thing that originally was pretty strongly thought of throughout all of these places was, okay, these have to be deposited without oxygen. Because if you have oxygen, that feeds bacteria that are decomposers. Right. So a good way of making sure you preserve everything is to make something anoxic, make it not have oxygen. However, there's certain like elements, I guess, that will kind of vary depending on how much oxygen was in the water when they were preserved. And looking at those elements, some places, like I think Wheeler Formation in Utah was one of the ones, have signs of like fluctuating oxygen levels. So sometimes they're anoxic, sometimes they have some oxygen. But a lot of places, including Burgess, don't really seem to have a no oxygen problem. So the way that they were being preserved doesn't seem to have been related to oxygen. Can you think of something else, Amy, that preserves animals really well by preventing bacteria from growing in them, other than clay and oxygen?
We have touched on a few of these things. I mean, the dinosaurs hadn't evolved yet, so Hadrosaur's asshole is off the table. There's no chance.
They didn't need that big of a space anyways. These are small guys.
Well, let's see. Well, you can have degassing events from lakes, volcanoes in general, gassing or even ashfall. Mm-hmm. Those would be some of my guesses.
Ashfall will be good for putting silica into the water. It covers things up really quickly. But they think that at least in Burgess Shale, there's another mineral. So in in the Burgess Shale rocks, they find this mineral called herringbone calcite, which herringbone is a beautiful pattern. And herringbone calcite is specifically caused by magnesium, high amounts of magnesium. And magnesium is often found in brine seeps. Do you know what a brine seep is?
Something super salty. Please tell me it's something related to something dirty and filthy.
It's certainly dirty and salty. They think that maybe part of the reason that the Burgess shales are so well preserved is these are basically fucking slug jerky. Like, these are like, they're brined. It's like salted pork, but you know, salted jellyfish.
It's somehow super, the salt is now precipitating out and is like super, super salty.
Yeah. So there's some indications that the ocean in general was more alkaline than it is today. So a little bit like more salty, more basic. But they think specifically in places like Burgess, there was also this input of brine seeps. And I could not find, this was a real adventure in deep geologic terms. Exactly. I could not find a great explanation of what these sources were. I found a couple that suggested that maybe this is coming from when you get salt water kind of subducting someplace or going underneath the continent, you can kind of, I guess, super saturate it with salt. And then if it gets superheated, it might come back up. And you get like hot springs that are super salty underneath the water. So that was one thing that I read about, but I didn't find.
Oh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. I didn't find anything that was like really obviously like, oh, yes, we have a spring of deeply salty water that is coming here. And I will say that in general, geologists who are writing about the Cambrian, I'm going to need you to do more drawings. Okay. I'm going to need you to stop assuming that anybody knows what the hell you're talking about when you just say the word brine seep or my current favorite, mud mound. Yeah, mud mound. Do you have any idea how long I had to fucking look that one up for? Like, that is such a generic ass term that was really hard to find. It's stromatolites.
See, why can't they just say that? Like, right? Which is like more complicated in some ways.
Exactly. It's like a mound of like dirt that was also produced by stromatolites and thrombolites and like bacterial mats. So it's like bacteria mounds of mud that kind of go up above the water surface. But it was very hard to figure that out, I will say. So brine seeps, creating some slug jerky, creating just like nasty, salty things that are already trapped in clay that is hardening really, really rapidly. And all of those things seem to work together really hard for the Burgess Shale in particular. In a lot of other places, they think it was probably more, maybe there were some salt impacts. Some of them are oxygen. But yeah, herringbone calcite was a cool one. That was the coolest stuff. There were other minerals in that paper, but herringbone calcite sounded really cool. They didn't have a great picture of it, but it sounded really cool.
Sounds like they didn't have shit for images, but no. We forgive you, geologists, because we love you.
I was like, we have to. That's why we just have to. We don't have a choice.
I feel you, though. I, you know, one of the things that sparked my curiosity again on Burgess Shale was like, oh, man, like, I got to write about it for my little children's book project. And I, too, you know, because we wanted to have like mode of preservation and like, how did the fossil? It was really fucking hard to find any direct, like a recent or like easy to interpret. And like, I have a geology degree. I feel like I shouldn't have, for a site that was that is as famous as it is. I was pretty shocked. Maybe we're feeling the same vibe here on. Yeah. I just was a little surprised by the lack of kind of like synthesis papers or oversight things. And yeah, it was really dense. Yeah. You know what, which is great. Y'all have your expertise. Enjoy reading all of the terminology of my Omamaya dentition paper. Enjoy that, you assholes. You know, but you don't.
Yeah, but you provide pictures.
I did. I did.
Yeah.
You still have to know what a hypoflexit is, but you know, like that's all right. You can figure it out because there's at least there's a picture. So yeah, no, I'm right there with you. For such a famous site, it's surprisingly not well known in a lot of ways. Like I was helping out with this, like we're getting ready for our Dino Ridge Quiz Bowl, which happens every fall. And we had this one question that we were trying to rework for the kiddos. And it was something around like an example of like a well-preserved site. And they were arguing about just how to say it. And I was like, oh, well, could we say like the Burgess Shale is an example of one of these sites? And they all looked at me blankly. And I was like, oh, okay. I assume that
right. Burgess
like,
Shale
the Burgess is more well-known than it is. And then when Kelly and I did our road trip from Alaska to Austin, Texas for graduate school in 2014, we went through the Canadian Rockies. It was beautiful. And we stopped at Yoho National Park. And I was like, cool, how do I get to the quarry? How do I see the Burgess Shale fossils? And they were like, oh, you have to reserve a spot on a tour like months in advance. And oh, by the way, when you and
I
went, well, then
I successfully
tried twice.
Twice. Yeah.
The Rangers, at least one of those times, was super friendly and was like, no, we would love to have you on one of these hikes, but you can't just show up and expect to be able to go. And so then I looked at a map and was like, well, I know where the quarry is, so I'm just going to hike the other side of this mountain where you're not really supposed to. And the rocks are totally different, by the way. So I dragged Kelly up this fucking mountain. Like, it was dusk by the time we got off this mountain. I shouldn't tell the whole story about what happened to my poor partner's tum-tum, but he didn't love that hike. he still talks about that hike. Like, how fucking dare you? 10 years ago, you remember? But then we got to swim in this beautiful lake. I think it's Emerald Lake right there. And it was like gorgeous. And then we met up with these amazing, like we just happened to have a great human interaction with these local Canadians who were very generous with helping us with a problem that we were having. After a shitty day, no pun intended, sorry, dear, we did not successfully make it to fucking anything with the fossil. I guess that was my point, is you really do, as someone who kind of tried to poach the quarry, I wasn't going to take anything, but I was trying to hike there unauthorized. Oh my God, is this going to get me in trouble? Anyway, I didn't succeed. I totally fucking failed. You can't do it. I want to do it the legal way, but it's very funny because then I've just found this book, Wonderful Life, the Stephen Jay Gould, and I open it up and there's a fucking brochure in it from Yoho National Park about hiking to the Burgess Shale with a receipt from a Missoula, Montana bookstore, like in 2014. So I then went to a bookstore, bought this book, I was like on a mission, and now I've totally forgotten most of it, except for some of these really, really cool organisms.
Yeah.
And another one that is super bizarro is Opabinia. Have you seen Opabinia before? Yeah.
I love an impression.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I don't have enough eyeballs. Okay, we're gonna do like,
well, make it work. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of like a star-nosed mole meets an elephant.
Longer. This is the one I fucked up. I guess this is the one that, because it doesn't have jointed legs, that it's somehow not a true arthropod. But it's like a super basal, like one of the earliest, if not the earliest, arthropod, or, you know, stem weirdo arthropod. Weird. It is very ancient. And that's why it doesn't look like anything else. It doesn't seem to act like anything else. It seems to be an organism that is now on its, like, a part of a weird stem arthropod group that now is totally extinct. But it is another soft-bodied animal, maybe about seven centimeters long. So it had like flaps where it could kind of like fly a little bit, kind of like the Anomalocaris. Mm-hmm. And then it had five eyes, and then it had a trunk proboscis that is compared to a vacuum cleaner hose. Like, it was jointed like a vacuum, and it had like fucking claws at the end of that vacuum cleaner nose trunk.
Right.
And it would have used that proboscis to seek out small, soft food. And it would have, yeah, and it literally had a turn, like at the end of it was like five spines. And just so weird and so different from anything around today that we still don't really truly. And it's also one of the ones that's super rare. Like I said, the jellies, like we have like 200 jellies. I was reading that of like well-preserved, like entire Opabinia fossils, there's only a handful. So they're a lot more rare in occurrence than some of these others.
Makes sense, right? Because they're swimming. They're not, anything that was on the ground is a lot more likely to be preserved for reasons we'll discuss in a second. But anything that's swimming is a lot less likely. It's like, you know, bats. Bats aren't easily fossilized, but rats are easier.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that also kind of goes in with the whole anomalocaris debate, was that they couldn't wrap their heads around this idea that the organism was broken up into multiple pieces because so many of the others were whole bodied. And I do wonder if that's a different and niche space in the ecosystem. Again, that, yes, well, maybe the ones that are already benthic on the ground are going to be easier to complete. But anomalocaris maybe was ripped apart or whatever by another anomalocaris, I'm sure. Yeah. And then, of course, I've saved the best of all of the Burgess Shale animals for last because it's fucking weird. Mm-hmm. It should be one of our mini mascots of the show. And that is our friend Hallucinogenia. Yes. Hallucinogenia. Woo, 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 woo. Woo-hoo. It literally looks like a kitchen scrub brush, like very much so. I've been cleaning a lot of baby bottles. So when I saw some of the pictures, I was like, yeah, yeah, I would. That would work really great to clean some bottles.
Opabinia was probably just using that to like clean out its snoot. Just deep-throating Hallucinogenia.
Hallucinogenia. I mean, it has one of the best names. It is a really... not only is it a fascinating creature, it, too, like the Anomalocaris, has just a bizarro story.
Yeah.
Essentially, though, it is this long tube of an animal. You know, it can maybe get about 2 inches long, but usually it's more around like an inch or so. It's long, tubular, and it's got 10... up to 10 pairs of these little slender legs. And then the first couple of pairs of legs are featureless and the other ones terminate with fucking claws. However, they also have spikes off of their back that are thought to be used for predation. But when the first scientists were describing Hallucinogenia back in the 1970s, they interpreted the spikes on the back to actually be their like legs, and that they're, instead of them being feet, they were more like tentacles that would maybe be used to grasp at prey.
Right.
And it's, what's really funny is that the guy who named this, of course, what is his name? Conway Morris.
Charles.
this one's Conway. This one is Buddy Conway. This is later. Yes, but still strong with that. So some of the, in that case, some of the tentacles wouldn't be able to get to the supposed head. And so then it was either like this network of a train kind of network of things to funnel things into the mouth. Or he also proposed that maybe each of the tube feet had a stomach on the feet and could just like from the different, I mean, all of this is wrong. All of this is wrong.
Good.
They're trying to wrap their heads around how it could have tube feet that weren't able to actually reach the mouth. And I'm like, talk to T-Rex. I don't know. Fucking figured it out. So anyway, and they thought that it was right. They're like, well, it wouldn't have been very good at moving around because it had straight spines for legs. So we guess it just used those to sit in the mud and just kind of be there while they tried to catch things. And it just turns out that they had the animal upside down. Like, long story short, is it actually is. I mean,
that doesn't still make that much more sense, right? Like, Hallucinogenia is still very weird, but yeah.
It's so weird. And it, so he, and that's why he named it Hallucinogenia. So yeah, it's Simon Conway Morris, and he named it Hallucinogenia because of the bizarre and dreamlike appearance of the animal. So, I mean, this is the 1970s. He's like listening to Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and fucking writing about Hallucinogenia. I mean, what else was he up to? We all know. We all
just
know.
And it's called psilocybin. The fucking Rocky Mountains. Hikes in 10 miles, like, gets high as hell.
Oh, God. Yeah, it sounds like it's a fucking grueling hike, too. So it sounds like a bit of a rough time. So I was just going to go over a little bit of the various interpretations of hallucinogenia over the years, which was, at first it was like, hey, there's this kind of blob thing on one end, obviously the head, obviously it walks on these spines and those legs. Nope, those are tentacles with direct with the direct line to the stomach. You know, I don't know how that's parsimonious here. I don't know how that was the simplest explanation. And then, okay, like the early 90s, they're like, no, you have it upside down. But then they put the head on the wrong end, the part that quote unquote decay fluids, which I love that take for a butthole. And then finally, they realized that it was actually the elongated end that was the head. And eventually in 2015, they finally were able to identify eyeballs on that part and confirm, in fact, that it was that's where its eyes and its head would be. Yeah, like I think you already said this phrase. I was not familiar with the group of animals known as lobopodians.
Yeah.
Lobopodians. I love saying it, though. Love it. Did you know? Did you know that that means blunt foot? And do you know that I don't have the maturity to read that without?
No, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that you don't have the maturity to read blunt foot without like immediately thinking of some jokes. But like, yeah, I did not know that. I literally came across the term lobopodian like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So yeah, hadn't explored the meaning at all. That's fun.
Yeah. I have discovered Snoop Dogg's favorite fossil, Bluntfoots, you know, like this is.
I mean, Bluntfoot, hallucinogenia. Yeah. Like these are animals that are just drugs. These are just drugs. Yeah.
Yes. Which is why like paleontology is so freaking fun. I mean, there's the kid friendly stuff and then there's all the drug references. I don't think that's what they were intending. I don't think that someone back in the early 1900s thought that I was going to interpret this as a total cannabis reference, but so it goes. So it goes. And so, they are these lobopodians, which are panarthropodians. That's what the right is, not arthrens. And panarthropods include all modern day arthropods, tardigrades, and velvet worms today. And are the group, and lobopodians are the group hypothesized to be the ancestor to modern true arthropods today, which are now like the most numerous group on the planet. Yes. So it is, it's got a long history. It was really, really. Yeah. So now the studies now with hallucinogenia are looking at, you know, how all of these characteristics that insects and spiders and crustaceans and all of these organisms have, we can all be tied back to organisms like hallucinogenia that we don't understand. And I really enjoyed the paper or the blog that called them walking cactus. I thought that was a pretty perfect.
That is a pretty perfect name. I like that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that was, I guess, the point that I was trying to make with some of my segments here is A, Burgess Shale, really cool rapid diversification of life. B, we see the beginnings of the animals and organisms that we have around us today. And C, we also see shit that's like, what the fuck is this? Because it's 500 million years old and it doesn't have any ties to anything today. And it'd kind of be weird if it all did. Like, no, things go extinct. So it's just really cool. There's just so many different things to get super curious about. Thank you for listening. If you liked the podcast, be sure to rate and review us on your listening platform of choice. We really appreciate it.
If you'd like to hear more and support the show, follow us on Patreon for some exclusive bits or on our various social media platforms. You can follow Amy on Instagram at Mary Anning's Revenge.
And Megan on Instagram and TikTok at GeopedalFabric, or both of us at Weird and Dead on Instagram and TikTok. This podcast is part of the Geology Podcasting Network.
Produced by the traveling geologist, Chris Spencer.
Cover art provided by Chris Spencer and the hosts.
Our theme song is Unlock Me by Krasnow. Editing services provided by the amazing Katie Bradley.
Hosted by and researched by us, Amy Atwater and Megan Weatherall. Thanks for listening.
And if you're thinking, wow, what a weird and abrupt ending. It's almost like you cut Amy off in the middle of a sentence. I sure did. And that is because I then talked about geology for 30 straight minutes, which is a bonus that will be airing on Patreon shortly. But otherwise, this episode was going to be unending. So it ends now. Here you go. Thanks for listening.